Audio is today talking to Dr. Alberto Hoy, who's a consultant rheumatologist and head of the lupus clinic at Monash Medical Center, a rheumatologist at Austin Health, and a research fellow at Monash University. Welcome, Alberto.
Welcome.
Alberto is one of the authors of an article that's found in the October 2013 edition of Australian Family Physician on systemic lupus erythematosus, when to consider and management options. And the theme of this month's AFP is diagnostic challenges, and systemic lupus erythematosus, more commonly referred to as lupus or SLE, is a chronic autoimmune disease that can be referred to as a prototypical connective tissue disorder. Alberto, can you tell us a little bit about what we know about the epidemiology of lupus?
Well, lupus is a rare disease in general, especially in our Caucasian populations. But I think we know from epidemiological studies that the prevalence of SLE vary quite a lot, and in the Australian context, perhaps the Asian and Aboriginal populations, they have certainly increased prevalence of that. The exact prevalence would depend a little bit about a method of definitions and so on, but generally speaking, we would say to patients that it's, the prevalence is about less than 0.1%, 1 in 1,000.
Okay. And so how can lupus present?
Well, this is one of the difficulties. Often it's been taught as a disease that has quite a heterogeneous presentations with quite diverse clinical presentations. And it is true that it is a multi-system autoimmune condition that can virtually affect any organ. However, having said this, typically the patients present with symptoms relating to their joints or skin, and sometimes they complain of mucosa inflammations in the setting of mouth ulcers, for example. And sometimes they also present with a variable degree of hematological abnormality or sometimes other constitutional features.
Okay.
So
there are some more common forms of presentation.
These are, yes.
Yeah, as you said, there is quite a range of things that it might present with. How is the diagnosis actually made?
Well, essentially, it's based on pattern recognition, and when we're trying to make the diagnosis, we're looking for evidence to support some end-organ involvement, so investigations that would support chronic inflammations in particular organ that we know is known to be affected by the process. We're also looking for other known associated serology, so presence of certain autoantibodies. And we generally use classification criteria that is available, such as the one from the Melbourne College of Rheumatology, although we now have a revised criteria in the article that I have discussed by the International SLIC group. And these classification criteria is generally helpful in helping us making that diagnosis.
Yep.
I think it's important to stress that a definitive diagnosis of lupus requires multiple criteria fulfilled in the patients. And so it's not based on any one single test, but it's the whole clinical presentations.
And you said it was the Table 1 actually has those criteria that you mentioned for diagnosis, but you made the point earlier that there's an element about pattern recognition. What are some of the more common clinical manifestations that we might see?
Yeah. So I've mentioned before that the more common presentation relating to the skin or the joints, mucosa inflammations, hematological abnormalities, so presence of cytopenia that is noted on our FBE examinations, for example. Patients sometimes present with constitutional features, although this is very non-specific and you can see it's not actually part of the diagnostic criteria. There are other sort of more serious organ involvement that we look out for. Sometimes they may be initially clinically silent, such as renal involvement, and other sort of rarer presentations, such as neurological or cardiac or pulmonary manifestation. They're the more unusual presentations.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier as well the other part of there was the clinical manifestations, but there's also often autoantibodies, and ANA or anti-nuclear antibodies is probably the test we expect to be positive if someone has lupus. Can you tell us a little bit about its use and interpretation?
Yeah, I think the anti-nuclear antibody or the ANA test is a useful screening test, and especially from the general practitioner perspective. We often say that this is the positive ANA is the serological hallmark of lupus, but it's also present in a range of other autoimmune conditions. And so what we expect is that the majority of patients with lupus will have a positive ANA, making it highly sensitive. But on the contrary, with the so with a negative ANA, for example, in someone who you think lupus is a probability, if you see a negative ANA, then it makes it highly unlikely. However, the test itself is very non-specific. I mentioned before that there are a range of other connective tissue disease that is associated with a positive ANA, so you have to take the relevant clinical features into the context before making a diagnosis.
Okay, and so you said there are other features, and there's also some other autoantibodies and complements. Can you tell us a little bit about their role?
Sure. I mean, this, I guess, is within the expertise of the rheumatologist, is interpreting other autoantibodies and complements. And for those of you who are not familiar with complements, these are proteins that you can measure in the blood that reflects depositions of immune complex usually. And autoantibodies, the common ones that you, many of you would have heard of, are things like anti-double-strand DNA, and there's a whole variety of them that is available on the panel of extractable nuclear antigen tests that you can order. And these autoantibodies are useful in assisting the diagnosis of lupus, and also furthermore can help to characterize the clinical features or even prognosis of the connective tissue disease that we're talking about. So they can help us to predict, for example, different organ that might be likely involved. And some of the markers such as anti-double-strand DNA or complements are also useful in gauging disease activity. So we use them on repeated measure in someone who has diagnosed conditions.
Okay, so if a patient has been diagnosed with lupus, what are the goals of management and some of the treatments used?
Yeah, I think this is an important aspect that we try to communicate to the patients, that the overall aim is really to control the disease activity. So, and because this disease tends to be sometimes relapsing remitting, and in different people it may have different intensity of the disease activity, so some patients might have very mild disease and some people more severe disease, the management goal would differ depending on where we think the patient's disease activity is. And generally speaking, mild disease activity can often manage very well with some symptomatic management with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory or low-dose steroid. But more severe manifestations will require higher dose of steroid to minimize organ damage. And we often will institute steroid-sparing immunosuppressive medications to prevent steroid-related complications.
Okay. And so, in summary, what are a few key points that GPs should bear in mind when considering lupus?
Look, I think it's important to recognise that lupus is a multi-system autoimmune condition, and we would like our fellow GPs to appreciate that there is a spectrum of severity in patients in lupus patients, from the milder end of the disease to more severe end of disease, and the management differ accordingly. I think it's also important to recognise that the diagnosis of lupus requires a demonstration of a number of clinical manifestations as well as immunological abnormality. And so no, there's no one single test that would confirm the diagnosis is about pattern recognitions. And I guess it's also important, too, to consider referral to a rheumatologist early to help with the diagnosis and making a correct management plan.
Excellent. Thank you for talking to us today. And I'll remind listeners that the full article can be found in the October 2013 edition of AFP. Thank you.